General Jim Mattis, 40 years in the U.S. Marine Corps. How do you keep improving as a leader to meet the demand of each role in your career? We all get promoted, you have different roles to play. How do you stay teachable as a leader? I think the most important thing here, Joel, is that you have to assume you must keep improving. If you make that your decision, that you must improve, if you look at every week in the Marine Corps as your last week of peace, and you must be better at the end of this week as a warfighter, then you'll push yourself on your 3-mile run down to 18 minutes, and you'll accept no excuses. You'll push yourself 21 pull-ups, and you'll accept no excuses. You'll push yourself to read the Commandant's reading list. You'll push yourself that when the things are going tough in the field, you keep your spirit up, and you're the man everyone can turn to, knowing that you don't give up. And you just keep improving every day with the assumption that if you're going to lead more Marines in the future as you get promoted, they expect you to be the physically toughest, the mentally sharpest, and the spiritually just the most undiminished person, that nothing, not cold, not rain, not enemy situation, not frustrating rules can get you down. And you just maintain this body, mind, and spirit improvement at all times. You stay teachable most by reading books, by reading what other people went through. I can't tell you the number of times I looked down at what was going on the ground, or I was engaged in a fight somewhere, and I knew within a couple of minutes how I was going to screw up the enemy. And I knew it because I'd done so much reading. I knew what I was going to do because I'd seen other similar situations in the reading. I knew how they'd been dealt with successfully or unsuccessfully. And so long as you continue along this line, so long as you remember somebody on the other side is watching, hoping that you're not at the top of your game, that you're not reading, that you're not working out, that you're not strong spiritually, then they're going to think they've got you. You want to always be the toughest, the sharpest out there.
We have a great episode for you guys, but before we get into that, I want to thank my sponsors over at BioWave. BioWave is a non-opioid way to block chronic or acute pain at the push of a button. It's VA-recognized, VA-prescribed, FDA-cleared, and made in America. BioWave is used by over 30 VAs and even professional sports teams. If you are a veteran or active military that needs help managing pain, visit BioWave.com and learn how to get treatment at no cost. You can visit BioWave.com/customers, BioWave.com/testimonials, or BioWave.com/VA. Welcome to the Global Recon Podcast. I'm your host, John Hendricks. I have a very special guest on with me, Changiz Lahiji. And Changiz finished up as a Master Sergeant with the U.S. Army Special Forces, served for a very long time in some very unique roles while serving the United States government. And we're going to get into all of that. Changiz is also the author of a book that was recently released called Full Battle Rattle. Changiz, how's it going?
Very good. Thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
No worries. So your book just came out. What day did it release?
I believe released on the 6th February this month.
Okay. So yes. And the book is available on Amazon and everywhere books are sold.
That's Yes.
Published by St. Martin's Press. So this book really dives into full detail on your life story, and you had a long career serving. First, you served in the Iranian military, and then you ended up serving in the United States Army as a Green Beret. So can we start with the beginning, obviously, with what happened in 1979?
Sure.
Things were very unstable in Iran with the revolution taking place and the overthrow of the Shah and everything like that. Can we just start with the beginning and how you got involved in that entire process?
Yes. As you know a little bit, I'm born in Iran, in the capital city, Tehran. and I finished high school. To get out the country, you have to serve the military at least 2 years. But you, if you have money rich, you can go and put the money in the bank for the government if you're coming back. So I joined the Army Special Force Iran. I spent 3.5 years. I came to America in 1974, worked for my brother gas station in San Jose, California. After a couple of years work, went to school at night, but I told myself, this is not for me. America is my adopted country. I love it very much since I was a kid, watching John Wayne movie or James Bond movie. I'm going to come here and do something better. So I joined the military, U.S. military, in 1978. I had a very nice man recruited me by next to our house in Stephen Creek Boulevard. And I told him what I want. I told him I want to be a Ranger and Green Beret. He said, you? I said, yeah. What's wrong with me? Nothing. Just it's pretty tough job. I said, I want to try it. So I went to basic training for Lynnwood, Missouri. I never see cold weather in my life that long, that much. Believe me that. So I did my best and finished a basic. Went to Sam Houston, Fort Sam Houston, Texas. Finished my medical and jump school. The jump school, I broke my leg, but I didn't tell anybody I broke it. I finished it after 3 weeks. I was limping all the way. Then I went to Fort Bragg after the graduation. Went to used to be pre-phase for Green Beret. Now they call it selection. Basically same thing, but old days is a much, much different than these days. So I got my goal. I got to went to Ranger School, Ranger Battalion, 1 year, Ranger School, finished the Special Forces. During the training and when I got my flash, those days it wasn't Special Forces staff, it was flash. If you graduate, you get flash in your brain, Green Beret. So one of these days I was sitting in the day room watching the news. I was on beginning of 1979, the people talking about hostage, and a lot of guys, they didn't know me, some of them, but some of them that they know me, they embarrassed me in front of a lot of people. Hey, Changis, come on, look at your brothers, raghead, try to kill Americans. We're going to nuke them. I was very upset about that. So long story short, we get fight, fist fight a couple times. A lot of my friends, they know me very well, back me up, support me. And from that point, I said, well, this doesn't work. They don't mean I'm not belong to here. You're not American. So I had to prove it that I am one of those guys. So I had a mission. I told my sergeant major, old guy, and my group commander, I'm going to go one-man team to help and do something, intel, pass it out to the higher ranks to get hostages out. So this is a part of the story I went over to Iran by myself and did a lot of good things, a lot of dangerous things, but fortunately didn't work because accident happened in desert.
Right.
But city of close to the city of Qom, that the holy city anyway. So I did. I couldn't stay no more longer. I was afraid they're gonna cap me and put me in the jail. So I did E&E, came back, went to south of Iran, close to Shatt al-Arab, close to Kuwait and Iraq. From Kuwait, E&E to the state. It's a first part of it we're talking about.
And that, tonight,
what happened? Yes, sir.
That accident that took place in the desert. You're referring to when it was a Delta Force, a team of Delta Force,
correct?
Commandos were staging in the desert to then insert themselves and right. go and rescue the hostage, American hostages at the embassy. But the aircraft that they were going to fly in on, one of them, if I remember correctly, one of them tipped over and bumped correct. Into another one, and it you know, there was correct. A big crash. And
yes.
After that incident, that led right. to the formation of the Joint Special Operations Command, or JSOC, where they had representatives from each branch to be able to coordinate operations and stuff like that.
Correct.
And it became like a much more fluid process moving forward.
Correct. Yes, sir.
So then you eventually made it back to the States, right?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Back to a state and landed in Charlotte, North Carolina. From there, I took from there to Fort Bragg. And everybody, they saw me, they were in shock and gave me a hug. And said, we are glad you came back. Nobody knew about it. I could not talk about it for anybody for me. Many, many years was classified. You know? Even my family didn't know, none of them. Even my dad, my uncle, they were in Iran. My uncle was high ranking in a DEA at the police department. And nobody knew I'm coming to Iran or because I want to make sure I can get in and get out. And when the book came out, everybody in my family read, I gave him a couple of books. I said, wow, why you didn't tell us? I said, I can't tell you anything about my mission. So this is a story about that part.
Right.
And you go ahead, ask me. I answer you back because I don't know what you're going to ask me or what should I keep talking or not.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about then very shortly after, I'm going to assume, is when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan and then that conflict took place. You were involved in training some of the Mujahideen in correct. Afghanistan and Pakistan to fight against the Soviets. Can we talk about some of that?
Correct, sure. Well, as everybody knows, special forces they have it. We go different country every time, every year two, three times, different country. It's called MTT, military training task for special forces. Our job is teach and fight for freedom, and try to come back. Yeah. So my team assigned for go to one team go to the Pakistan from Pakistan. Went to Pakistan, from Pakistan came to Afghanistan, and we met a lot of Mujahideen, and we trained them for, I would say, 60 days. She was supposed to be there 90 days. But during that time, because I speak Dari fluently and Farsi fluently, Dari from Tajik in Afghanistan, and most Afghani speak Dari, and most of them, different most of them, they speak Pashto. I don't know Pashto. If I see them, if people talk to me the face to face, I can figure out what they want.
Yeah.
But now, not teaching, not talking, no. So I did a lot of, we did a lot of cache, a lot of ammo in the caves for Mujahideen. And one of, a couple of days when I was off for relaxing, a lot of guys I know, Afghani, I drove with them, five, six of them, go to the Kabul, to the Panjshir. Panjshir is one of the big city and nice city, all the fighters, Mujahideen, used to live there. I don't know yet now. And one of the fighter called Shah Massoud, have you seen the book or heard from somebody? He was calling him a lion for the Mujahideen. Very, very powerful man, fighters for freedom. I met him, and he thought I'm a pump rider or pump breeder. I said, no, because my name was one of the Iranian that I didn't know, honest with you. The one of the Iranian name is Changiz. He writes poem about everybody. He loves the guy. I said, hey, Shah Massoud, I'm not pump rider. I'm a Green Beret, you know, the Special Forces of America. I came here to help you guys. As soon as he heard that, he patted my shoulder. I sit with him, drink a cup of tea, dinner together, and after that, he was pleased, and I drove to those four or five guys to the Kabul, get some intel what's going on with the Soviet troops, large Soviet troops. God, I don't know how I made it, but I made it. Came back to base camp and we came home.
And having the background that you have and being from Iran, I would imagine that it's easier for someone like yourself to blend in some of these environments.
Yes, sure. Because, well, you know, I'm a little bit darker skin, and they speak the local language, and I could blend in perfect. I put those Afghani clothes called pato and a hat and dark glasses. But when I went to the city, and I had to hide my my pistol under my my shirt, so nobody can see that, only for protection.
Right. So let's So I just wanted to ask you, you know, after you graduated and you became a Green Beret, what was your specialty as a Green Beret?
The first one, because I was medic. To be medic is very long process to graduate. It takes 1 year just medical school. Then you have to go phase two and phase three. So in the middle of medic, the terminology of a medical, I could not understand it. It was hard for me. And still, I don't speak English well. So I didn't feel anything, but I told my, because we used to stay in the, used to call IMA, Institute Military Assistance, those days. Now they call SWEC, SWC. So I told my first sergeant, not team sergeant, listen, this is too hard for me. I don't understand it at all. Please let me change my MOS. You let me change my MOS to be a weapons man. So he was agreed. He was a very nice guy, Sergeant, First Sergeant Montgomery. I never forget about his name. And before I got to A-team, be honest with you, I was in the A-team because the A-team used to train processing for the student to come be A-team, become to the group, training for 45 days, teaching rucksack, map reading, patrolling, everything. The team sergeant over there, it was Phil Quinn. From ODAF 561. Soon as he find out I'm from Iran and the Iran military, he grabbed me. He said, from this day, you are my team. You better pass the test. This from this. Yes, be honest, that's unbelievable. So from this, for medic, when I couldn't make it, so I went to the Fort Benning again for 11 Bravo. Those days used to be 11 Bravo, 11 Charlie, every 11. But since, I believe, 91 or 89, they changed MOS and Special Forces as an 18 series.
Right.
So now I grab 11 Bravo, 11 Charlie, light and heavy weapon together. So it was 16 weeks training. I finished that. But during the training on the 18 Charlie motor training, a lot of guys was prejudiced about me. They didn't want me to be a Green Beret because they think I'm an Iranian, foreigner, whatever. They believe I just respect. I don't care anymore. So as soon as in the test, they kicked the bipod from the Motor 60 and Deuce, and Deuce, actually. I said, why you do that? Oh, you didn't pass it, man. Go over there. Specialist. I was a specialist that time. E4, corporal. So this happened twice. Then I told my sergeant major from 5th Group, Sergeant Major Lopez, LePage, Command Sergeant Major. He came to the weapons school and told the guys, listen, do not mess with the guy. I don't want to give him favor. Test him. That definitely, we need this guy. We need this guy. He's valuable as everywhere you believe it or not. So he stand up and guys test me. I maxed it. I got 100% every test. But those guys could not do anything wrong to me. So, like I said, I was in the A-team since 1970, late 79. And I spent 20 years plus in A-team without any break. A lot of people, especially some officers, jealous. And, oh, no, we have spent 30 years. I said, okay, you spent 30 days. Sure, 30 years. I'm 30 years. But you spent 2 years in the A-team. Rest of the time, you guys are spending in the office, paperwork. Every time they came to me and said, hey, you have to go to do office or paperwork. I said, I don't know. No comprende English. So, there's not my excuse. But yes, I'm glad I did that because that's why I signed up. Be a Green Beret, be in the A-team with my brothers and fight for freedom.
And you stayed with 5th Group your entire career?
No. I stayed 5th Group. As you know, the first Special Forces Group used to be in the Vietnam. Then after Vietnam, deactivated. But 1984 activated, they wanted most of the people from 2 groups, 5th and 7th, hand-picked go to 1st group. So I was one of them, but there was jealousy. Command Sergeant Major did not want me from 7th group. I go be the part of 1st group. Reason, he said, you speak Farsi Arabic. I said, yes, I am, but there's nothing in my record 2-1. I used to be 2-1. I right now they call 214 now, I believe. Yes, it is 214. So, but I told a lot of guys, they know me. I said, anyway, I got it. My foot in the first group. Went to Fort Lewis, Washington, build up the different teams. I was ODA 174. Went to ODA 174. I stayed Fort Lewis a couple of years. Then Fort Lewis, they PCS me to 1st Group, Special Forces, Okinawa, Japan. Only one company was there, Charlie Company, with the hostage rescue team. I stayed there for almost, first time, 6 years.
Over in Okinawa?
Yes, Okinawa, yes. Base Tori, Camp Tori, what I call Base Tori, yeah. Toria Station, put it this way, yeah, Toria Station. We don't call it Toria Station. And from there, as I was there when the Gulf broke up, got a couple of big sergeant majors from group and SOCOM, Special Forces, came to Okinawa for inspection. Then I know a couple of them very well. They know very well. I said, listen, a war start. Please send me from here straight to Gulf. Oh, we cannot do that. I said, why? Well, you have to go sign to 5th Group again. Then they're going to send you. I said, so major, wasting money. Why? I'm here. You guys just write the order. I go straight to the people that I know, 5th Group. So it didn't happen. I went from there, 1991, to Fort Campbell, because 5th Group left from Fort Bragg to Campbell, and 3rd Group replaced it. So I was in the Fort Campbell for less than 2-3 months. You have to go to processing. God, you don't know about that. It's a long. So I get my foot to the Saudi Arabia with the went to forbidding first processing for Saudi. From there, attached to the AC, did a lot of recon, a lot of intel, and we came back on April, May sometimes, back to Fort Campbell.
And all the work you're doing that was in Iraq?
Yeah, I did Iraq, but not more than 60 or 90 days, yes. I didn't involve in that much action, but action was my life in action, put it this way. I did not kill anybody, but I was in action in Iraq, yes. Came back, we did processing again, but after August, I got a special assignment, worked for FBI in New York with two more guys. One guy said he speaks Arabic very well. I guess it was okay. It's not my judgment, but my assignment was Intel, speak Farsi, Arabic, go work for new FBI, IT2, International Terrorism, with Squadron 2nd, 2. So I did about 15 months work with them. They didn't want to leave me because I guess I did a good job. I don't know.
And you guys were doing work, gathering evidence with on Omar. Sure.
Yes, Omar. Yes. Yeah. Correct. I did that in the mosque, not a mosque. Then I kept my eyes open, see what's going on. They were very pleased of that.
And he was involved with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Correct.
Who was then, he was really kind of the mastermind of the 9/11 attacks.
That's correct.
And they ended up like hunting him down. I think, I don't remember how, it wasn't too long afterwards, maybe no. 2 or 3 years, something like that.
Yeah. Correct. You yeah. heard it. Yes.
So then after that, you were in Somalia during the Black Hawk Down incident as well, right?
Well, the Black, yeah. Well, the thing is, we want to work as a mission, as a humanitarian mission for the food supply to the people.
Right.
In the UN compounds. I was with the ODA and because I was, that time I was new to everybody. Nobody really know me, but old guys from Fort Bragg, that the different battalion, different teams, they know me who I was. So we went over there, a couple team over there. I did a couple good things. And I kill people. That's not it. But I, you know, like I said, better than them and me get killed. Right. So there's a fact. So I did that. Yes, I did that with the team. But I wasn't there that long. I was there probably a month or so. Then we came, I came back. Then after that, I got PCS again. Went to Monterey, California. I took the advanced Arabic course. And from there, PCS in the state fifth group, they sent me back to third group for Bragg, North Carolina. That was around in May. They sent me to third special forces group because third also activated. Third also went to Iraq also. But I wasn't with them. So from there, I had my company commander from first group, Colonel K, William K, and Colonel Group Commander Boyette, Mark Boyette, was group commander. And Colonel K was a battalion commander. They couldn't believe when I was there, just grabbed me, they gave me half. And after a couple months, Haiti broke up, as you know. So we whole battalion, actually most battalion, the second battalion, we went to second battalion went to Haiti, August 1994. We stayed there because I get along with everybody. It was miserable place.
Yeah,
very miserable place. Heat, humidity, and no water. You know, the water, the supply for us. We stay in the drops, actually runway, because Rangers. Before we go, we went to Guatemala, the whole battalion. So get ready. Almost 15-20 CH-53. Chinook, couple of Blackhawk, I think Blackhawk also. They were there, Ranger landed, 2nd Battalion, and they did a coordinate with the commanders. They went first and secured the DZ for us, and we landed. We did not jump anything, we just landed. But my rucksack was got 130, 140 pounds. I couldn't walk. Trust me. Not only me, everybody. Two weapons, stuff like that. It was, we had M16 those days there because M4 didn't come out yet. So it was good. We helped. After a couple of weeks, we were supposed to invade it, but President Carter and Colonel Powell, they talked to the people other side. So instead invaded Haiti, we did a bit of peace negotiation and humanitarian help. So, but we did a lot of house-to-house search. My team, ODA 326, we confiscate almost 2,500 weapons. M1, M3 Griscom, Uzis, everything.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. We have a lot of people, and especially the kids, because I love kids. I love people. After 2-3 months, I know some of them. We play soccer with them and we got the house up the hill was belonged to American nurse. She was married to Haitian, very perfect guy. Perfect guy. Very honest, very human being.
And how long did you guys stay in Haiti total?
I stay 9 months, but the rest of them stay 15, 16 months. The reason I stay 9 months because my mom, emergency came through. She was in a hospital in Santa Clara. So it was almost she died, but I came home. She was alive. Yeah. I stayed home about 2 weeks. But that time I went back to Haiti. All my team, everybody were in the unit. And they took all our M16. They gave us brand new M4 rifles. I like it much better. We stay for Bragg with the range, zero at everything. For everything we have, everything for Bragg. This time I did not go for bidding, no.
Okay.
Yes.
And you also did some work in Beirut in Lebanon.
Yes, I did.
So there was a big incident there where there was a bombing at the embassy.
Correct.
And this was when Ronald Reagan was president, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yes. Well, it was Ronald Reagan. Yes, he was president, and the Middle East assignment is most of the time belongs to 5th Special Forces Group. But at that time, we had so much backup stuff to do. So only a couple team went to a 3rd Battalion, went to Beirut, not from 2nd Battalion. And also 10th Special Forces Group. I don't know how many the team was there also. So our mission was that before bombing happened, we did a lot of training for the militia, Christian militia, to train him, supply everything for them, technique to against the Hezbollah.
They were fighting against Hezbollah for a while.
Correct. Yes, correct. I don't know, still doing or not. I have no idea, I'll be honest with you. But at that time, they were doing stuff like that. So when we were at the safe house, when embassy blew up, wow, I said, what happened? Where's the noise come from? So after a couple of minutes, we said, oh, yeah, we're in big smoke. So we drove our vehicle. Those days, we didn't have Humvee. I don't think so. No. We had the Toyota white pickup truck. So we went close to embassy, show our ID card. We started helping people. The Marine were so happy. We helped them. They appreciated it. And then I stayed there, I guess, 45 days. And another night, we were doing training, patrolling. I saw people top the roof of my 9 o'clock shooting. So I cover and record shed. Hit my right leg, blew my knee, but it wasn't that much. But I lay down And my medic, Patrick, big guy, good medic. So say, you okay, Shangis, you okay? I say, yeah, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm going to make it. But I couldn't walk the wall. I covered myself, down ground, went behind the wall, and he came follow me. He put the strap bandage in my leg, tied it. But that time we tried to fire back, nobody was there. So I just he hold me, went to safe house. Then he told me, you want me to report it? I said, report it? Report for what? He said, no, please don't. I don't like it because I'm okay. Don't report anything. So it took me about 3-4 days. I was on my foot doing the same thing again.
Before we continue the conversation with Changiz, I'd like to give a thank you to my sponsors over at BioWave. BioWave is a non-opioid way to block chronic or acute pain at the push of a button. It's VA recognized, VA prescribed, FDA cleared, and made in America. BioWave is used by over 30 VAs and several professional sports teams. BioWave is used by Naval Special Warfare, the Pentagon, Walter Reed, hundreds of college sports teams, and several professional sports teams. If you are a veteran or active military that needs help managing pain, visit BioWave.com and learn how to get treatment at no cost.
Go ahead,
yeah, Changiz, if you could tell the audience a story of 2002 when you were in Afghanistan, if you can give some background on that.
Right. 2002, I was working for State Department, company USIS contractor, teaching cars eye detail. And every 8-9 weeks, we had a couple days downtime. So, like I said before, I speak fluently Farsi Dari, and I have a lot of friends over there. They speak Pashto Dari. So I heard the government reward $25 million for find Bin Laden. So I told my colleague the day was off, 3-4 days. His name is John. I don't want to say his last name. So I said, John, I'm going to go find this guy. So we go get him, get money. He said, yeah, good call. He said, I need 3 days off. He said, go for it. So I took 3 days off with the two Pashto, one Dari guy. They all do anything for me still now. And myself, we drove from Kabul to the Abdullah's family, Tora Bora area. So we went to a valley, top the hill, and the next day, okay, the next day. So we know the address, Pashto with them, carry my gun under my shirt again. They do the same thing, top the hill, and we kneel down and flat on the top of the hill, hiding behind the trees. And I said, Changiz, so what? Look at, I saw 20, 25 people over there, 4 or 5 Toyota, white Toyota, and a couple tall guy. One guy was taller than everybody else. I said, gotta be. He said, Changiz, this is it. So what? It's a Bin Laden. So I look at it again with blinkers very, very closely. He said, my God. So my guts was go get him, but it was wrong idea, because there were 25, 30 people over there. Four of us with a pistol, that doesn't cut. So I drew the map, see where I am, where we saw the guy, what exactly it was. I came back with this guy, Stay Abdullah's uncles, at night, drink a good tea, a good dinner. And after next day, we took off in the morning, came back to camp. And I told John, hey, man, I saw that. So I went to embassy, U.S. embassy was old embassy those days. Now they spent a lot of money. So I went to tell, hey, I need to talk to intel officer or attaché. I told him the status. I gave him a scratch map. Hey, this is it. This is around here. Then, and he said, okay, ready, go. Let me wait. I'm going to get a couple more guys. Those guys came talk to me. So, oh, good job. We'll let you know. So, let me know. Okay. So I'm getting involved with it. Well, we let you know. Don't worry about Mr. Lahiji. They call me Mr. Lahiji. Don't call me Mr. I'm a Changiz. So I went back to the camp, the town, do my duty next day. Nothing happened. And I told John, what's going on, man? And to me, those days, right now, 15, 16 years ago, we want to catch Bin Laden, because if we did that, the war was over. We have to come home. Everybody come home. So it's my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Hopefully I don't go to the jail when I say that. And, you know, but to me, we should destroy him right there that time, instead spend billions of dollars to do our taxpayer. We have so many people starving in this country, even around the world. They need help. But that's not my my call. That talk is above my paycheck, so I'm not gonna talk about it.
Right, and that led to, you know, years and years of fighting. Even, you know, still today they're fighting in Afghanistan. But
sure.
So you retired in 2001, right, from the army. This is post military for you.
Correct. Yes, military for you. Correct. January.
Okay, so you still continued for a couple of years to do work for the State Department?
I did after from 2012, I worked for the State Department as a contractor, security. I worked for a couple private company too. I worked for MPRI in Europe. Gathering information from making sure bases safe. I work for PAE in the Lockheed Martin in the Darfur. In Darfur, if you want to ask me about Darfur, I can tell you that place, it was challengeable. Good people, poor, but as you know, money always talks.
Right.
What else you want to ask me? I'd be glad to bring it up.
I would like to talk about 2003 in Iraq with the incident in Fallujah.
Yeah. Fallujah was actually late 2003. I was working in Afghanistan. Then I went to Iraq with a different company. I was there for 90 days contract. I was doing the convoy, the food supply from Iraq, Baghdad, to Fallujah. Then it was a Black War was also there too. Dynacor was there too, of course, and a couple more. I don't want to mention. So I was in the first convoy, then. People, another come in front of us, so they got attacked with the rebels by the bridge. They grabbed the four Blackwater guys and snatched him very bad. And we tried to go back, but we couldn't. We couldn't. You know, we already passed the point, and it was hard for us to go back again. It was too late. So that was very tense. That was very, very scary time for me too. But I'm sorry what happened to them. It was a bad moment. Shouldn't happen, but it's happened.
Yeah, that was a pretty big incident. I remember it being on the news and everything. And
you're right.
Four of the guys were like dragged out of their vehicle and like.
Yes.
Burned and like hung from a bridge and
by the bridge, correct.
And I think at least one of them was a retired Navy SEAL. If I remember correctly.
Yes, you're correct. Yes, retired. Yes, correct. Just most of the guys went with me. Most of them were retired from military, right. And still SF, Marine, Army. They were correct. And it was really, honest to God, I feel bad until now. I couldn't do anything. We tried, but there were so many people over there. So many people.
Right, it was like a mob, like an angry mob.
Oh, God. Oh, yes.
Yeah, and then I remember subsequently, I believe it was a SEAL team that was kind of hunting down the people responsible for that, and there was like a whole big situation with the media and whatnot.
It was.
So then, you know, you mentioned Darfur.
Yes.
Which is in the Sudan and Africa. And if anyone knows anything about that place, it's a very difficult place. There was genocide taking place there. And, you know, among many bad things that happened there.
Yes.
What exactly were you doing in the Sudan?
I was on a call ceasefire monitor. My duty was... I go with patrol every day. They had a vehicle, Japanese called Buffalo vehicle, like a Mercedes-Benz, and truck. We go take the supply, food, fuel to different location of camp that every U.S. personnel there to record the incidents as rape, fire, killing. So come to embassy, give it to UN, so make decision what they should do. Every day, 5-6 days a week, I did convoy, escort the convoys to the different location. Be honest with you, even horse cannot go that area. It's so bad. Dry, heat, is very, very dangerous. Rebels, they have 1,000 different tribes that fight you. And the best thing I did, because I spoke Arabic, but the accent from Sudanese totally different and modern standard of Arabic, but they would understand me perfect, no problem. So one of these days, nothing done this until I was there. Honest to God, this is a true story. I went to the commander. He was from South Africa, and the UN compound. So listen, let me go talk to these guys in the village that is close. So make a peace, give him some food, give him some fuel. So tell him, do not attack, do not kill any more innocent people and attack our convoy anymore. What your problem is? So he said, can you do that? I said, let me figure it out. So I talked to a couple major Sudanese that were getting money for U.S. to try to help their people and help us. Yeah, those people come with us to the patrol too every day. So I said, Changi, are you serious? Said, yes, it's a dangerous job. I said, I don't care. Let's go do it. And I was in the camp of capital of Darfur, Sufia, I think so, yeah. God, I think something like. Anyway, he talked to a couple rebels and he said, okay, we're not going to attack you guys, just let's go talk. So the African Union commander, he did supply for us CH-20, no, MI-27. I don't know, you see MI-27? I never seen it in my life. This MI-27 is a huge, huge, bigger than the CH-53, twice bigger.
Yeah.
So I talked to commander from Rwanda, because the Rwanda soldiers, they were protecting us from camp and all the way to the patrol. So we got five Sudanese, seven 8 and other people came with us from that area, two rebels and 15 Rwanda soldiers for security. So we took off, we landed in the God knows where. So we landed, and the chief of the village, very nice, he knew we're coming. So he set up the nice chairs for us close to trees, and tea and cookie. And I went about 200 meters to the east to meet the rebels. So after half an hour after we landed, sitting waiting for them, oh God, I see 10, 15 pickup truck coming, the guy with the machine gun, with the AKs, turban, face cover, everything. Then I put my hand all the way up, so God help me, I hope they don't kill me.
Yeah.
I said, God help me. Then I said, Allah Akbar, God is great, they stop. And I say, my name is Muhammad. I didn't say my name is Cengiz, because I said, my name is Muhammad. So I shook their hand. They escorted him to the table. And we have a couple translators from Sudanese, very good translators, the Arabic to the English. So I just sat down, watched what they're doing, the talk. After 45 minutes or 1 hour, hour and a half, so green tea, you know, they're very surprised, they're very pleased. They promise him, hey, yes, we give you some food, we give you some fuel. That was it. Be honest with you, since I was there about 13, 14 months, I never see any attack. Before, yes. Before one of the attack happened to my colleague, sir, he was retired, Special Forces 2, that burned the whole village. They killed 25, 30 people. And he came back safe, stayed with me 2 weeks. But after that, nothing happened when I was there.
Yeah, and that whole situation was just crazy out there.
Oh, you better believe it. And after a week or two, we called Oldery. Oldery was belonged to President Carter, Baby Bishop, and Nelson Mandela wife supposed to come over. David came over. But before the embassy, Secret Service, check a couple more guys, our background, are we safe, are we okay? So they chose me to drive President Carter and Bishop Bhutto and Nelson Mandela as a driver. I said, yes, because I have experience. I did VIP protection about 5-6 years. So they chose me, and I was his driver. I was armed, and Secret Service agent sit next to me, and those three sit behind. And President Carter asked me, what is your name? I said, sir, my name is Cengiz. Do you remember who I am? He said, no. I said, sir, I'm that guy. Send you letter 19 before hostage rescue, 19 before 1991. They tell you who I am, what can I do. Let me choose my 18, go Iran, release the hostages. He said, he never got the letter. I said, serious? He said, no problem, sir. Probably nobody gave it to you what happened is gone. He was surprised. He was surprised I did that. There's a story from Darfur.
Right. So, and, you know, we kind of went through briefly in some of these topics, but sure. In your book, you go into more detail on this, yes, and much more.
Yes, it did.
And your book is available everywhere books are sold. The easiest place is probably Amazon.com to, if anyone wants to, like, order it.
Yes, it is Amazon.com. It is on Noble, actually Barnes Noble. I see it myself. I see a couple library, actually bookstore in Monterey, California. Also, a couple guys, matter of fact, the day before yesterday, they told me that your book is the library. I said, serious? I said, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad. I'm just telling people, I just want to tell everybody in the world, especially Americans, hey, don't judge me by my accent, my religion. I'm American by heart. I love this country. I cannot judge. Only God can judge. And let's get together, get the job done.
Yeah, Changiz, I just want to thank you for coming on here.
Yes, sir.
You know, you've done a tremendous service to this country.
Thank you, sir.
You know, I know serving as a Muslim, where you served wasn't something that's easy to do. You did it. So I just want to thank you for your service.
Thank you, friend.
And again, thank you for coming on. And
you're
hopefully
welcome.
We'll have you back on.
Hopefully too. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.